So, all right, welcome back to week two, section two of CS75. For those of you watching at home, as always, you can email us at cs75section@gmail.com, or if you have AOL Instant Messenger, you can instant message CS75section, and we will try to answer your questions live here during section, and if we don't, just leave us an email address, and we will get back to you via email after section. So, last week we covered the basics of XHTML and a little bit of CSS. This week we're going to go into dynamic web pages, and namely PHP. How do you use PHP to make websites that respond to the users? So for example, lots of websites you go on, you log in. And then once you log in, you get a page that's personalized to you. For example, when you log into your email, you see only your email, not everybody else's email. How do you get websites to respond to individual users? And this is done, you know, behind the scenes on the server with scripts. And one of the ways to do this is with a programming language called PHP. And that's what we're going to go into this week. But first, a little issue I noticed with some people is some people asked me questions about their website, and for some reason it wasn't working. And these generally have to do with file permissions. Like when they uploaded their files to the CS75 server, sometimes if they were testing on XAMPP at home, pictures would appear on XAMPP. When you upload them to the server, these pictures all of a sudden do not appear, or certain pages you get like the 404 error or forbidden, not allowed to access. These sort of things. And so that has to do with file permissions usually. And so you can fix all of this with a command called chmod, which it changes the permissions on the files. The idea is that you have files on your CS75 account. Some of them you want everybody in the world who goes to your website to read. Some of them you want to keep private for only yourself to see. And so chmod allows you to set permissions on the files. And I'll just give you an example. And so you can literally say, this file can only be accessed by me. Other files can be accessed by everybody. Sorry, were you raising your hand? Oh, I thought you were. Never mind. So if I go into CS75 here, actually, no, let's not do that. Let's go into my CS75 account. So I'm logging in through PuTTY, and just as I showed you last week, if I go into my, if I do an ls here, I see my directory structure. And so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to do ls-l, which gives me more information about each file that I have here. And we see here's a list of all my files. I have mail, dir, domains, imap, and public HTML. And then to the left of each file is a list of permissions. And so, essentially, what we have here is this list here. We've got some dashes here and then some letters here. Lets us know what other users are allowed to do with the files and what we're allowed to do with the files. And the basic structure of this is, I'll draw this out here. You have for each file, you have permissions for yourself. You have permissions for the group. And you have permissions for the world. And so if you notice there are, aside from the dash on the left, there are 10 dashes, but there are 9. So you've got self, you have RWX, group RWX, and world RWX. And so basically R stands for read. Do people have permission to read the file? Meaning, can they open it up and see what it is? W stands for write. Do people have permission to change the file? So generally, for write, you're going to only want to give yourself permission to change the files. You don't want to give any random person who goes onto your website permission to modify the files. X stands for execute. So if a file contains code, or if a file is some sort of program, do they have permission to run this program on your server? And generally, you don't want to let people do that either. And so if you look at now, this should start to make more sense. When you look at these files here, you'll see what the permissions are. So, for example, this file here is something that I uploaded as a demo last week. You'll see only RW and then all dashes. So this means that since it's the leftmost set of three dashes, it means that only I can read this file. Nobody else can see this file. If you look at my public HTML directory, right now it's actually misconfigured, and we're going to change that. I'll show you how to fix it. You can see that I can read, write, and execute this directory. Execute means descend into this directory and look at what's inside of it. And the group can read, write, and execute. The group we don't have to actually be concerned about, but everybody else can also do this. And this is bad, right? We don't want other people to have permission to modify this directory, that sort of thing. So what we can do is we can get rid of the write privileges for everybody else. So let's say I want to change my public HTML directory to look, instead of like that, I want to give it permissions that look like this. So D actually just stands for directory. I want myself to be able to read, write, and execute. I don't want anybody in the group to be able to do anything. And then I want people in the world to read, not to write, and to be able to execute. So it turns out that each block of three permissions corresponds to a certain number. And so what we do actually is we give the number 4 to correspond to read, 2 to correspond to write, and 1 to correspond to execute. And so basically you add up the numbers for the permissions you want to give, and then you you specify your chmod command like that, and I will give you a demonstration. So for example, if I want to read, write, and execute, that's 4 plus 2 plus 1, that's 6. Here, I don't want anything, so 0 plus 0 plus 0, that's 0. And then here I want read and execute permission on my public HTML directory for the world. This is 4 plus 1, this is 5. Okay? And so actually we can also give group permission, read and execute, so 655. Sorry, 755. My bad. Yes, 4 plus 2 plus 1 is 7. So I've got read, write, execute. They have read and execute. We might as well give it to the group. If we're giving it to the world, we might as well give it to the group too. And then read and execute here. And so if I wanted to change my public HTML directory, what I do is chmod. I type in this. Can everybody see what I'm writing in the terminal too? Is it too small? 0755. And then public HTML. And I do that and hit enter, and that's it. Now if I go back to ls, I'll see here that, okay, that is a bad demonstration. Bum bum bum. Okay. okay, maybe that's because it's a symbolic link. CD domains. Sorry. Okay, here we go. Sorry, so it turns out that public HTML is something that's called a symbolic link, which in Linux you don't have to worry about. It's something in Linux, it's the equivalent of a shortcut in Windows. What I actually was changing was it's basically pointing to this folder, skis.com, which is my domain. And we modified the permissions and it now looks like this. Okay, if I wanted to just, and we actually didn't, chmod 0755 skis.com here. Now if I do that, okay. So we've modified the permissions on the actual folder rather than the symbolic link. And you see, I put in 0755. Before, there was no read permission on this folder. Now read permission has been granted on this folder. So the problem is, like, sometimes why things don't appear is because, you know, the world doesn't have read permission on, like, your GIF file or whatever. And so if you go into your directories and you look and there's some error like that, sometimes it's because the proper permissions aren't set. And as we go through today, you'll see generally HTML files should have the following permissions. So if you have an HTML file, you want to be able to read and write it. You don't really execute HTML, so 06. The group can just usually read HTML, and then the world can also just read HTML. So if you have HTML, generally the permissions are 0644. The same thing for pictures, so GIF, JPEG, etc. That's what you want to do. If you have CSS also, same thing. You can read and write, the world can read. If you have PHP, which we will go over today, you actually just want to have 0700. So you can read, write, and execute this PHP. The world can do nothing. And that's actually because you don't want people reading your PHP. It'll pose a security issue, and we'll go into that later. And when people access PHP files on their website, on your website, they are not actually accessing them. The PHP files are being executed as you on the server. and then the results of the PHP files, what the PHP file outputs is being returned to the user. So you actually don't want the world to be able to read your PHP files. So that's how Chmod works. Thought it would be useful to go over that. Now let's go to another thing. If you go to cs75.net and you go to software, this is another thing which is going to be useful in the coming weeks. The first couple of items on this page, you'll see add-ons. And these are all extensions for Firefox. And these are web developer extensions. So they allow you to look at web pages and see cool things about them. And as you start building your own web pages in the next couple of weeks, you'll find it useful to have these things to be able to, in essence, debug your websites or see, like, let's say you're on another website and you see how something works and you want to find out how, you'll be able to see that. So one of my favorite ones, and you can just literally follow all of these links and install them and then play around with them. One of my favorite ones is the DOM inspector. And that's actually, you can get through a different page. And so what it does is, you can actually, do I have it on this computer? Tools, inspect, I actually don't have it here. So for example, let's just go through the web developer toolbar. The web developer toolbar gives you this thing on top of Firefox. And you can see here now, you can see if there are forms on the page, you can look at all of the forms. If there is CSS on the page, for example, you can just go to display view CSS, and it will open up the CSS for the page laid out in a nice understandable way, sort of by section. And there's a lot of other things you can do with these extensions, too many to cover, actually, but they will be useful, especially the JavaScript debugger when we start doing JavaScript problem sets, which is two problem sets from now. Okay, so let's talk about PHP. So put together a simple example in PHP. And this is just a first example. So I have my very, very simple website with a form. Have we all seen forms yet? We can also go over how you make forms, basically. So, hello world, this is my first form. And it's asking me for my name, so I'm going to put in my name. And I'll specify my gender here. And then when I hit go, it's going to send what I'm doing in this form to a PHP file. And then the PHP file is going to take the information from my form and do something from it. So basically all it does is, hello, Jesse, or should I call you Mr. Cohen? And let's actually get rid of, sorry. That shouldn't be there. I had something else in my script earlier. Form1.php. You should get rid of it. So PHP is written within HTML, essentially. Sorry. So, hello, Jesse, or should I call you Mr. Cohen? So basically what this does is it took my name out of the form, and then it put that in HTML, and then also it had to make a decision, Mr. or Mrs., and it got that from my gender buttons. So let's look at how I did that. First of all, form1.html is rather simple. I just have, you know, some text here, and then the form tags maybe you haven't seen before. And so you start off a form with these form tags, form, and then you close your form. Action is probably the most important part of your form. What it means is when somebody hits the submit button on this form, which I have here, type equals submit, it sends all of the information in the form to a file on my server called form1.php. And that's where the PHP code is, and that's what we'll see next. Yeah. So it's sending the information from this form to form1.php. And then the method is post. And there's two types of ways of sending information. There's get and there's post. And we'll go over the difference between those in a second. And so then I have my two buttons. I have input name equals first, and then another one name equals last. Those are for my first and last names. And then I have my radio buttons for gender, and I can have male or female. And so that's the way this page is constructed with HTML. Are there any questions about that? Okay. So now let's look at what this is doing with PHP. This is my PHP page. And The way PHP works is that you can embed it in HTML. And so what happens is, this is form1.php. The information from my form goes here. PHP is embedded in tags that look like this. You have the question mark PHP and then the question mark end bracket. And so the server actually looks through this PHP file for all of these tags, and it executes the code in these tags. And then the code in these tags will like leave some remnants. Like it might print some stuff out, which I'm doing with the echo commands here. And then that gets inserted into the HTML file, and that's what gets sent back to the user. So the user actually, it's going to see all of this HTML, but it's not going to see anything in these PHP tags here or here. I think that's the only PHP we have in this page. So you can actually see what we've got here. This is the page I got back, right? If we look at the source, you'll see here, hello, Jesse, or should I call you Mr. Cohen? There's just text here. There's no PHP code. Where if we look at what's on the server, or should I call you, and then we have all of this PHP code. So let's look at what the PHP code is doing now. So echo. Echo is just a command that means print something to the document. You can also use the command print. Echo and print are pretty much equivalent. So let's write that down. There's actually pretty much no difference between the two commands. I think echo is a little bit faster in terms of performance. It's also just sometimes there are multiple ways of doing the same thing. You'll see this come up again and again in terms of programming. For all purposes, there's no difference between the two. So we can have... Oh, I've got things. Echo. And then in here we have, you know, some text in these quotes or print. These are just, you know, the simple ways to print stuff to the screen. And so I'm echoing this. And this looks confusing. What it means is this is something called a variable. And a variable is just a way to store data. So like everybody here has had some sort of programming experience a little bit, right? Okay, so you all know what variables are. This is a special variable. It's the post variable. And what it means is when the data is sent from my form here via post to form1.php, all of that data is stored in an associative array that has the name underscore post. And PHP, by convention, all variables are prefixed with the dollar sign. That's how PHP knows you're referring to a variable. For you who did C before, actually, the difference between C and PHP, in C you have to declare all of your variables with a type. In PHP, typing is done automatically. The interpreter will figure out what type you want your variable to be or what type it most makes sense to keep your variable. So anyway, post is an associative array. And what this means is that it's essentially, how would I describe this? You can think of it as a dictionary. It's a dictionary of keys and values. So we've got a key, and it is associated with a certain value. So in this case, first is our key. So who knows where first came from? If you look back at my form, and I'll give you a hint, look on this line of code here. Where do you see first there? It's the name on the form, right? So what actually happens is each of these form fields, a entry in the associative array post is put there. And so actually, if we wanted to use the other method of sending data, if we wanted to use get instead of post, if we change this from post to get, then instead of using post here, we would use get. But it works the same way. So these are two variables which are essentially pre-populated for you when you get to the page. And so all I'm saying here is I want to know what the person typed in the first name field of the form, and I want to print that out. So I'm going to say hello, you know, first name. And then here, or should I call you? And then this is a little bit more complicated. I have an if statement, and I'm looking at the gender, right? And that's going to be one of two things, male or female. And then if it's male, I print out Mr. And else, if it's female, I print out Mrs. It's also possible that it's something different. If people were playing with the post through something like live HTTP headers or tamper data, and we can go over that later. But anyway, so I'm checking if it's one of these two things, and then I'm making the decision, Mr. or Mrs., based on that, and then I'm just printing out their last name. And so this is pretty simple. This is like a very, very simple example of something you might want to do with PHP, making the web page respond to the user. And then down here, I just have, you know, my same form as above again, like if they want to do it again. And so that is this example. So the difference between post and get. Do people know what the difference is between post and get? So what's the difference between post and get?
In a get method, the arguments are passed in the, I think it's called the query string, but on the command line.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, exactly. So if we change this to get, and we'll do it just to demonstrate here, actually. So get, let's change everything to get here. And then you'll see something looks different. I think that's it, right? And then I want to do this here. Get, and then we save, and then we change. The form method also has to be changed to get. So if we do that now, and we go to form1.html, and then I try this, you know, Jesse Cohen, and then here we go. Now I hit go. Look at the address bar in Firefox. Do you notice something different? At the end, all of a sudden, is we have first equals Jesse, last equals Cohen, gender equals male. And so the get method, as you said, passes all of the information in the website address. And then the post method passes it behind the scenes, so you don't see it up there. So if you have like very, very short strings of data, you might want to use the get method. If you have a password, probably don't want to use the get method, because you don't want the person's password appearing up in their browser for everybody to see. You probably want to use post. Similarly, if you have something very long, you might want to use post also instead of get. And so these are the two things. In addition to post and get, there's also something called session. And that looks like this. I'll just write here. And session is something that has to do with cookies. So all of you know what cookies are. It's a way to identify a user across multiple visits to the same page. And so session is associated with a cookie, and it allows you to store data about that user in your script. So session will persist across multiple pages. Get and post are just, you know, taking data from one script or one page and sending it to another page via the get or post methods. And you'll actually use session in your first problem set, and there will be more directions about that there.
Is it also an associative array, the session variable?
Yeah, session is an associative array exactly the same way that get and post are. So you can do session of, you know, whatever it is. For example, like one common thing, people give each user a user ID. So maybe you call it UID. And then you get the UID, and then by that you know who the user is or something like that. Right? So it's the same way, it's an associative array. And you can add entries to session, you can remove entries from session, and work on it the same way you would work on all associative arrays. Okay, so let's look at another example with PHP here. Oh yeah, and the other thing, did I show you this? Yeah, so if you look at my HTML code, you'll notice there's no PHP in it. The point is the users cannot see the PHP. So question for everybody, why might we not want the user to see the PHP itself? Why do we only want them to see like the finished product of the PHP and not actually the code itself?
Security.
Security, okay. So that's actually exactly the answer. The real reason to use PHP and like when you really want to start doing things, and you'll start this in another problem set for now, is to work with databases. And so you'll have your SQL database. And like you'll notice that you embed the password for your database right in the PHP. And so if the user can see the PHP, now all of a sudden they know the password for your database. They can, you know, get into your database, change things, whatever. We don't want them to be able to do that. We don't want them to see everybody else's stuff in the database. So we just want them to be able to see their stuff. And that's why the access to the PHP is very, very strictly controlled, right? It runs on the server, They only get what comes out of it. They don't get to see how it works or what it's doing or anything like that. And so actually it's important that you have the right permissions on all of your PHP scripts so that users don't see this, especially later on. Okay, so let's look at another simple example of PHP. calc.html. Okay, so I'm going to go to my local host here. And I wrote this up too earlier today. So try this cool calculator. So you can actually just use this. How many people here have used Google Calc when you have like some quick math to do, right? Okay, this is exactly the same thing. So we can do 2 times 3 plus 5. And we hit go. And then you asked us to calculate 2 times 3 plus 5. Your result was 11, right? So how did we do this? Well, actually, here's the code. And there's a huge, huge, huge security flaw here, which we're going to go into later. So calc.html, same thing. It's just a form. It sends the stuff via post to calc.php. And by the way, there's no reason. Like, I'm calling it calc.html and calc.php, but I can call it whatever I want, right? I don't have to have, I could call this, you know, mycalculator.p. It doesn't have to have the same name as the HTML file. There's no requirement there. So I'm sending it there. What does calc.php do? So the first thing I do is I just echo my calc field, which is the one form box, right? You asked us to calculate, blah. And then I have here PHP. And then what I'm doing here is I'm constructing a string, and then I'm calling a function called eval, which is kind of like a cool little trick in PHP. And eval basically takes a string of text and attempts to interpret it as PHP and execute it. So if you notice, what I'm doing here is I'm allowing the user to enter in any PHP code into my website and then execute it on my server. So very bad, right? This is something you would not want to do, because then again, they have access to everything now. They can like delete your web page if they want to. Luckily, this is running only on XAMPP, my local computer, and not on my actual domain in real life. Otherwise, it might, you know, be taken advantage of. And so one of the reasons I did this was to go over string operations. So if you notice what I'm doing here, post calc field is what I get from the form. I am creating here a new variable query. Okay? So just to create a new variable, all you have to do is refer to it. And the only requirement is that every variable name be prefixed with the dollar sign. So I have dollar sign query. And then I'm saying that set query equal to this string here concatenated with my calc field concatenated with a semicolon. And so concatenate basically means take a string is a series of characters, right? It's just the way that computers refer to lengths of text. And so post calc field is a string. It's whatever the user typed in. And concatenate means take two strings and smush them together. And so basically, I'm creating here a new string that looks like, let's say my post calc field was 2 plus 3 plus 5. Here, I'm actually creating the string result equals 2 plus 3 plus 5 semicolon at the end. So semicolon is how you end a statement in PHP. It's also how you end statements in many other programming languages. And so if you notice now, this now actually looks like a line of code in PHP. And so I'm actually passing this into eval here. Eval is executing it, right? And so when it executes it, it's basically going to say store 2 plus 3 plus 5 in result. And then it just prints out result for me again. And so that's kind of cool, right? But it's not something you would want to do on your website unless you were very, very strict about checking to make sure that they're not calling any illegal PHP functions that you wouldn't want them to call. You would have to like restrict it to just some sort of calculating thing, which you can do with something called regular expressions, actually. And we can go a little bit into how regular expressions work in a second. So, and you'll notice like I can actually do anything here. I can do like literally echo, hello, or test, right? And then if I put this in, well, actually, I'm not doing any bounce checking here. But let me see. Hold on. How can we do that? I have to do this. Sorry. There we go. Echo test. And then, OK. Never mind there. But okay, so one of the things I'm not doing here is I'm not doing input checking, error checking. Yeah, it had to do with where I had my quotes. I wasn't escaping my quotes properly. Error checking is something that you want to do, right? Like, if users have to input data into your forms, you want to make sure that they're only inputting something you would expect them to input, and not something that might mess up your website like this. anyway, so we will go into our third example. And this actually has some very, very simple error checking. And so here we go. Design.html. So make a design. Type in a single character. So I'll type in a single character here. Let's just type in star. Go. And this makes me a little pyramid of stars. Okay. So how did I do that? Well, who wants to guess how I did this, first of all? I did it with something called the loop, which we've all seen loops before, right? Okay. So design.html. I have here make a design. I have my form, as usual. This is, you know, becoming very, very familiar to us all. So in design.php, what am I doing here? Well, I'm just getting the character that they typed in. And then I have some loops here that are going and generating the little design. So what's different is, notice the top of my page here, in these tags here, like right at the top, the first five or so lines. What I'm looking for now is, I want to make sure that they've actually put in some valid input here before I actually go and execute all of this code. Okay? So I have an if statement, right, which is a conditional. And I'm checking, first of all, did they actually put in something? So empty is a function that will tell you if is this, you know, entry in, is this variable empty? Does it contain nothing? Which, you know, it might contain nothing if they just hit go on the form without typing anything in. So first I want to make sure that they've actually put something in. So if it's empty, then I'm going to do this, which is basically a redirect function. It takes them back where they came from. So just to demonstrate that here, let's say I submit this page with nothing. It takes me exactly where I started again. It doesn't, you know, let me get to the rest of the stuff. So if it's empty, it does a redirect. And you don't have to worry about the redirect. That's actually going to be nicely encapsulated into a function for you in the first project, project one. So I'm checking to make sure it's not empty. I'm also checking to make sure it's not more than one character long. Okay, so str length, it just gets me the length of the input. So if it's not equal to one, so if the character that they typed in, if they typed in more than one character, then I will also do this. So here's a question somebody might ask. Why can't I just have if str length post character is not equal to one, right? Because if you think about it, if they typed in nothing, it would be equal to zero, right? And if they typed in too much, it would be equal to two or three or four or whatever. So, right, that would seem to work. The problem is that because of the way associative arrays behave in PHP, if they don't type in anything, then it's possible that that entry just might not have anything. In which case, when you try to access it at this point here, when you try to access it, you might trigger an error. So you want to check to make sure that it's not empty first before you actually like go in and do these things. Okay, so now let's go through. So that's error checking, very simple error checking. And you know, error checking actually gets very, very, if not complex, tedious. Sometimes you'll write code and you'll find out that the vast majority of your code actually is error checking stuff. And then the actual code that does actual stuff, like, you know, add this entry to your database or do some query in your database, is just a couple of lines when you've just had, you know, 30 lines of error checking to make sure that everything is in the format you want it. Okay, so let's look at this. So we don't really need to say hello here. And we don't really need to echo this either. So let's get rid of that, just to simplify things. So I'm starting off some PHP in the body here. First thing I'm doing on this line here is I'm just taking my char from post and storing it in char here. So it's just to make things nicer for me when I'm writing my code. And then I've got here, and then actually I should be calling this here char. I have two loops. So a for loop is basically a way to get the computer to repeat things many, many times, right? So the format is, I never remember which markers were working and which ones weren't working. And eraser. So for loop is a way to repeat things multiple times. And the syntax for a for loop is, we've got for, and then you have your parentheses, and then here you have three statements. One is a condition. We'll call it a test, actually. One is an initializer. And one is you can call it an increment or end, after. We'll call it after. And so basically what this does is I'm running some code up here in my code. When I get down to the first line of my for loop, the first time I hit my for loop, the interpreter will execute what I have in my initializer condition. So in this case, it's saying, set this variable I to 0. Okay? And then what it's going to do then is it's going to go into my for loop, and it's going to execute all of the code in my loop. All right? When it gets down to the end of my loop, to the closing brace, it's going to go back up to the top, and it's going to check this condition. So this is a logical condition, the same type of thing that you would have in an if statement. Right? So it's going to check this. If this condition is true, it's going to go down and do it again. And it's going to keep doing it until this condition becomes false. Okay? And every time it gets down to these bottom brackets, it's going to do this condition. So actually, I should have drawn these arrows like this. It's actually going to go here, it's going to do this, and then from here, it's going to go and test. So if you look at this for loop, it's, you know, your classic simple example of a for loop. We're setting I to 0. Every time we get down to the bottom of the loop, we're increasing I by 1. And we're going until I is equal to 20, right? Because we keep increasing I by 1. While I is still less than 20, we keep doing the loop. Once I reaches 20, we stop. Okay? And so I just have two nested for loops in here. I'm literally, you know, each of these is printing a line for me, right? So if we look at my for loop here, I'm printing, you know, a center tag just to center the HTML. And then in here, I have another for loop. And so who wants to take a stab at what this for loop is doing in here? So we've got j, we're setting it to 0. We're increasing j by 1 every time we hit the bottom of the loop. And we're continuing the loop while j is less than I. So if you think about I being a line, right? Every time we move to a new line, we're executing this loop. And all this loop is doing is it's printing out our character, right? So it's printing out the character the number of times of the line that we're on. That's what it's doing, essentially. Or 1 minus the number of times of the line we're on. The line we're on minus 1 times. Sorry. So if you'll notice, that's how we got this simple little pyramid here. So, 8. We'll make a pyramid of 8s. So there are like 19 lines here or 20 lines, and it's printing out 1 time on the first line, 2 times, 3 times, 4 times, all the way down. So just a very, very simple example of a for loop. And so this just gives you an idea of, you know, obviously you could type this in yourself, right? But much easier to do it this way. And also, like, in this case, we know how many lines we want, right? But, like, maybe we could modify this page. Let's modify this page, actually. So let's ask the user how many lines he wants, okay? So how would we do that? How do people think we would do that? So what's the first thing we have to do?
You need a form.
Right, exactly. So we need a form. So let's add the form to the page. So input name equals lines. We'll call it lines. Type equals text. Okay. And then, so now we have a form field for that. So if we look here, and we go back to design.html, if I saved it, I did not save it. Now I'm saving it here. Now we have two form fields. And, you know, if we made the HTML nicer, we could say, like, character and then lines. But we know what it is here. Okay. So we've taken care of that. Now let's change the PHP. So I have char here. Let's create another variable. Lines equals, what am I going to put here? So it's a post variable also. And I called it in my form lines, right? We called it lines, so I'm just going to lines like that here. So we've got that. So now, how do I change my for loop so that it's only printing that number of lines?
It's your I variable.
So my I variable keeps track of the line that we're currently on, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want the total number of lines. So right here I've got 20 hard code.
Yeah.
So we actually just want to make it lines. Okay. So this still actually will not work. And the reason it won't work is because we need to first cast this to a number, actually. And so if I save that, and I'll explain why in a second. So right now, lines is being interpreted as a string. So it's being interpreted as, you know, the character for whatever number we typed in. So actually, I want to make that into a number. And actually, I think I did that with ATOI in PHP. Sorry, it's been a while since we've done PHP. Okay. So if we do this, let's say I want to make H, and then I want to make, you know, 9 lines. And okay, let's just do a quick little Google. Okay, so ATOI PHP, or int PHP. Yeah, so let's try int here. It's actually been a while since I've done any PHP. Okay, let's try it without. Okay, there we go. Sorry, actually, the interpreter is smart enough to know on its own. I'm used to programming in C, and in C you have to be extremely explicit with all of your variable types. You don't have to do that, yeah. So actually, you see, like, this is actually a string. And then when we try and interpret it here, compare it to a number, PHP knows, and PHP will change it to a number for us. And so actually, that's nice. When you work with programming languages like C, C++, you have to specify all of this explicitly, which you can attest to. Yeah. So it just does it automatically, which is nice when you're programming. Yes?
So all variables that go through post are going to be strings?
All variables that go through post are going to be strings in general. There are other... so you see here where we see type equals text. Or whatever, uh-huh. You can sort of send variables sometimes there are ways to send variables as different in different formats. There's like encoding sometimes, which you can put in forms, or I don't remember the tags exactly, but there are ways. But generally, no. Yeah.
So going back to his question, you're passing it as a text,
mm-hmm.
and PHP the interpreter itself. Mm-hmm. Does the type casting for you?
Yes. So actually, we're not passing it as text here. Type equals text just means give us a box. Because here you see type equals submit, it means give us a submit button. And then on the other example I had, let me show you the example that we had with the first one. We had type equals radio, and those gives us those little circle buttons that you can only click one of. Right, but there's like an encoding tag, which you can sometimes put in forms to do that, to pass it as other things. But yeah, so for your answer to your question, you're essentially passing everything as strings in. And then the interpreter looks at it and casts it to whatever it wants to cast it as, or the thing that makes the most sense to cast it as.
Unless you explicitly say don't cast, which can you do that? Like if you're passing something, you wanted to keep it as string as opposed to the interpreter doing something to it?
Well, yeah, there are ways to explicitly cast it. But you don't need to. Like, because, for example, let's say you have a number that's just an integer, right? If you put it in echo, it's going to know, okay, now interpret this integer as a string and print it out as a string. It will do it automatically for you, again, the same way. Anyway, so we have here our example. If we go back again, you know, so we can print however many lines we want. And now, also, this is variable, right? And so essentially, what I'm saying is this gives you a lot of flexibility, right? And when we go into databases next week, SQL, and you'll be able to store information about the user and then get that information back later, and you have to use PHP to do that, to execute all of your database queries, it gives you even more flexibility. So are there any questions about syntax? Like, it's difficult to teach this because people have so many different backgrounds here. Yeah.
Dumb question. Upper lowercase, does it matter? You've been using your variables as lowercase.
Mm-hmm.
Can you, if you're sloppy, could you have the form send uppercase and your PHP look at it as lowercase?
So actually, a good question, and I don't know the answer to that because it actually depends on the programming language. Some programming languages are strict about the case. So you can have two variables with different case. Like the same name in different case, and they will, they will interpret those as two different variables. Other ones, they will interpret them as the same variable. Let's try it. So let's say you had a question like this, and you want to figure out the answer. How would you figure out the answer? So, well, we can just make a little change in our script here. We have char equals post char. So let's try this, char, okay? If PHP thinks that upper and lowercase are the same, let's just set this to, you know, y. Here we go. Okay? And then if I save this here, so if upper and lowercase are the same, then this line here is actually going to change this variable. And so no matter what I type in on my web page, y's are going to be printed. If they're different, then this line should not affect this variable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back. Let's H15. There you go. So it is case sensitive. Other questions? All right, good website, php.net. If you go to php.net and you go to documentation, this gives you documentation for every single, you know, function or almost every single function that is available in PHP. And so you can look here, variables. Here we might have also been able to find out if variables were case sensitive or that sort of thing. For example, you've got your variables. How do you define variables here? Anyway, so let's say there's a function called printf. Many of you may be familiar with it from some other language like C. It's a print a formatted string. So you want to know how printf works in PHP. It turns out that it works almost exactly the same way as it does in C. And so you type in printf in search, and it just gives you the man page for printf, which explains how it works. And so you'll see here, you've got, you know, how do you call it? Printf, and then you give it a string, and then you give it what are called variable arguments. So you give it a format string, you give it variable arguments, and to keep a long story short, you can also see then examples down here. Contributed by users, you can see examples contributed by... Okay, so in this case it says see sprintf for a description of format. Sprintf is almost the same thing as printf. And then, so we look at this man page, and it gives you nice examples. So if you want to do something and you don't know yet how to do it, try Googling, try the search box on php.net, try emailing us. For those of you who already know C, PHP is remarkably similar to C, with the exception that variable typing is different.
Very probably a semantic question. You had the design.html.
Mm-hmm.
You try to call the PHP file.
Yes.
The design PHP file also has HTML code in it,
mm-hmm.
and the body and the head.
Yeah.
Do you really still need that? Because the way I'm interpreting is it's just going to call the PHP file and then based on return value go back and be in the same existing design HTML page.
It won't, actually. It will not. So I'm in design.html here. As soon as I hit the submit button on this form, my browser takes all of the information from this form, it sends it to design.php. From then on, design.html has no more role in anything. Okay? So that's why I have all of the HTML code in design.php. Because what happens is, this is essentially, you can think of it as a template for a web page. Okay? And then, so like, it's the general form of a web page that I want to send back to the user. And then the things that change based on who's accessing my web page are in these PHP tags. And so my server takes this template, it does the stuff inside these PHP tags, right? And then this stuff will leave some remnants, like the remnants are from the echo commands here. And so basically what it's doing is it's inserting text in between here and here on my web page. And then what it inserts is getting sent back to the user. Does that answer your question? So yeah, that's why you need this HTML here. It's not taking this and then putting it back in design.html. That's why I could have named this whatever I want. I don't have to name it the same name as the HTML page that it's you know, getting its data from. The thing that links this page and this page together is the action on the form, which I have here, design.php. That's saying send it there. I could have it sent anywhere I want. Okay, so we have 5 minutes remaining. Are there any other questions? Okay, let's see if I can go into regular expressions really quickly, because regular expressions are exceedingly useful in a lot of things. One thing is validating input. So regular expressions allow us to test strings for formatting, just to see if they're formatted in a way that we want. And so a regular expression is basically a normal string with special characters in it that that have special meaning. So let's say I want to, the user must type in string something that contains an A and a B in the form field, right? So I can create a regular expression, actually dot star A dot star B dot star. And so I'll actually explain what this means in a second. I'm going to put this in quotes as a string. So basically what this is saying is I want everything that the user puts in their form field to match this pattern. And all this pattern is dot means any character. Okay? Star means it can repeat as many times as it wants. And then, so basically what we're saying is you can have, I won't draw these parentheses here, it'll confuse things. We can have any character repeating any many times it wants, or like any number of characters. Basically, all this is saying is that A and B must be contained somewhere in the string in this order. Okay? So what we can do now is I have this regular expression. When I'm doing input validation, I can use a function called pregmatch, which we can look up on php.net here. Pregmatch. Perform a regular expression match. And so basically what this does is it takes a pattern, okay? And a pattern is something like this that I constructed here. And then it takes in a string. So the string that we would give pregmatch is the string from our form, right? And then it searches subject for a match to the expression given in pattern. So basically, this is going to tell me, does the string that the user typed in contain something that matches this pattern, right? So a lot of times, this will give us an easy way to do input validation, right? Like, so for example, let's say you want to check an email address, right? So an email address, what's the format for an email address? We've got, like, some name or whatever. And then we have, you know, our at character. And then we have something else, and then we have a dot, and then we have, you know, some three-letter extension. Or, well, now you have other top-level domains. So between, let's say for simplicity, we have either two or three letters. You know, so .us, .com, something like this. So how might we construct a regular expression for this? Yes. Sorry, did you? No. Okay. So at its very, very simplest, we would have, you know, dot star. Dot star gets us this part of the email address, right? Because they can have anything here. And we'll refine this later. Then you have your at sign. Then you have another dot star for their domain, right? And then you have the dot here. Now, the dot has a special meaning, right? It has the meaning of every character. So we actually have to escape it with a backslash, okay? When you have a special character that you want to be interpreted as a literal character, you put a backslash before it, and it'll be escaped. And then here, we have three letters, or two letters. So actually, we're going to use dot to refer any letter, and then we can use brackets, two, three. And so actually, there's a lot of semantics to regular expressions. And you can look this up on the web. But this is basically what it's saying is, any number of letters or any characters here, the at sign, again, any number of letters, a literal character dot, and then two or three characters of anything we want. Okay? We can be more explicit now. Let's say we only want email addresses that contain letters. Right? Instead of using dot here, which gives us any character, we can put a character set in brackets. So let's just say capital letters, I'll accept two, and numbers. So maybe A to Z, A to Z, 0 to 9. So this is basically saying anything lowercase, uppercase, or numbers repeated any number of times. And so you can actually get really, really, really specific with regular expressions. And there's a ton, yeah?
Does the star include 0 times?
The star does include 0 times, actually. So we might not want nothing before here. So what we can then put is we can use the brackets, and we can put a minimum and a maximum. So we can put a minimum of one time, at least one character before here, and then a maximum of as many times as we want. Or if there's like a limit, let's say no email address can be more than, I don't know, what sounds reasonable, you know, 32 characters long. Something like that. That goes in here. Right? So actually, then what we would do is we would get some email address from our form field. We would construct this pattern. We would use preg match, and then we would know, did they enter a valid email address? Did they not enter a valid email address? And so that's like some example of how we would do input checking. And actually, a good resource for regular expressions is this website, which I never remember, but here it is. Yeah. So this is a fantastic website for regular expressions. And if you want like all of the syntax and examples, you click on examples and you'll see lots of examples for cool things that you can do with regular expressions. Here, for example, is how would you match an IP address, right? Like 2 to 3 numbers, or is it 1 to 3 numbers, a dot, 1 to 3 numbers, a dot. You can see this. It sort of makes sense as an IP address, right? Everybody sees how that works. Slash D means it stands for decimal. It just means a digit, 0 to 9, right? Okay, so we will stop here. I will take questions after class and hope to see you next week.